So I need to tell people why we're going to be trying to rush through as quickly as possible today.
Because we're sweating our faces off.
Yeah. So this is we've had yet another catastrophic failure of our AC.
Now this is nuts, man.
It's not a power outage, but when was it that the ceiling came crashing down in the garage? When was
this year?
That
was last year.
That was last year. So when?
Oh gosh, I want to say it was like last June when we first turned it on, or like late May.
Yeah.
When we first turned it on, and we had this huge, like a huge hunk of the ceiling fell down.
Yeah.
And it was just soaked everywhere.
Right, and it actually took until like September before they really
finished the
repair and got everything done.
Right. I mean, I think we got the AC unit repaired.
Yeah.
Relatively
so
quickly.
It was working.
But like the whole Garage Odyssey. Yeah. That was like, it took till September to finish. It was nuts.
Right, and get everything back in.
Yeah.
So we had to get basically insurance adjusters, remediation company, and then HVAC repair company, and then contractors to actually replace the ceiling in the garage.
Right. Don't forget the pods.
And then, yeah, we had all the stuff in the garage had to be pulled out and put in pods, which were stashed in our driveway. And then they basically had no incentive to put everything back once they were done and got paid.
Right.
So we had to follow up constantly, and it dragged on for weeks and weeks, well over a month.
Right.
To try and get the pods out of our driveway.
Like, just come, put the stuff back.
Yeah.
And take your pods, guys.
But they had done what we thought was a good job rerouting the drainage water from the AC unit in the attic. And so then again, a little earlier this summer, it went out.
Yep. There's some kind of problem with the hoo-ha.
Like the condenser was busted, or something was giving out. But, yeah. And they fixed that, and we thought, great, it was up and running again. You know, it's another cha-ching, $500 or whatever.
Right. But now,
just yesterday, water started pouring through the garage again. The garage ceiling again.
Right.
All the newly repaired
ceiling.
Newly repaired ceiling with all new, like,
drywall, etc.
Yeah. Drywall and paint and wood and everything all repaired. And it's just pouring out.
Yeah.
So something had sprung a severe leak again.
Mm-hmm.
And
precisely what we're not sure.
Yeah. So we have shut it off. But it's been over 90. And over 90% humidity.
Fantastic.
It's miserable. We're sweating our whatever things you can sweat off are sweating off.
Leaving a trail.
Yeah, and we're just, my hair looks like one of those troll dolls.
You look great.
It's just, it's a humidity sensor. It puffs up like a giant, you know. Look like a dandelion gone to seed.
No, you look fantastic. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, thank you. But still, yeah. And so we're up in the attic, and we have all the windows open because we can't bear it otherwise.
Nope.
It's not the attic. It's the upstairs.
The upstairs bedroom, right? Upstairs guest room.
And it is cooling down outside a little bit finally, but the humidity is intense. Humidity is just nauseating.
It's a little over the top.
So, yeah.
So lucky for you, we're going to rush.
We're going to try and do a speed run through some articles.
And a slightly deeper dive on some others.
Yeah, you may hear background sound like cicadas and crickets and stuff because the windows are open.
Right, yeah, so there they are.
Normally this room is pretty well soundproof, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, I actually going to have a timer going. But so we're trying to catch up because we've lost a lot of days
in sort of the news cycle,
the planned
right
arc of this multi-part conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, being the one that has to edit us, that I ramble like crazy and just fill all the available time and then some. But we're going to try and be a little more concise today and record enough to do a couple parts, get a couple parts out this week. I have no idea what subtitle I'm going to give this section, but we're...
Oh.
Yeah.
Delta changed things.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Get it. Delta changed it.
Yeah. All right, anyway.
The first one is basically a very brief mention from an article in where?
MLive.
MLive.com, which is Ann Arbor's...
I mean, like, we could have got into it from Ann Arbor or from Detroit News. Or, yeah. It's all MLive now.
Right.
Yeah.
Delta predominant in Michigan. This is a headline. 99% of specimens identified as variant in last 4 weeks.
And that was August 14th.
This was August 14th. So yeah. It's probably 99.9% now.
Yes. And just again, for the record, for my friends who are like, but there's no test for Delta. No, actually, Delta's a kind of COVID. The COVID test detects all variants.
Yes.
And to determine the variant, they sequence basically random samples, and they make a determination based on the percentage of random samples that come back as a specific variant.
Yep.
So,
right.
Just...
We did a whole section on this and a whole article on this and talked about it a long time about this fight against this misinformation that there's no test for the Delta variant or no test for Delta. And so, therefore, Delta's just made up.
Right. Not actually made up, but still, yeah.
Yeah. So, cases are climbing like crazy. Delta confirmed in all but four counties. That was 2 weeks ago. The week over week average has been going up dramatically. Here's according to this article, 55% are fully vaxxed in Michigan, 12 and over.
That jibes with what I last checked. I was checking daily for a while, but it like plateaued off, so I've stopped checking it regularly.
Yeah, that's
but that sounds about right.
That's what the article says. And they also say, which just repeats an older narrative, in some counties the rate is lower, which could lead to pockets of outbreaks, suggesting that Delta will only break out where vaccination is lower.
Correct.
And we're going to take that apart.
No, because that's just not true.
We're going to take apart that assumption and basically talk about how that's still the old model. Like hanging on
desperately,
right? But you know, I want to point out that a lot of prominent people are still spreading this, and just today Nate Silver on Twitter was saying basically vaccinated people don't have to worry about Delta, and like I was having a conversation with two other PhDs in public health,
bless them.
And they were criticizing Nate Silver, and I was saying Nate's, you know, model is Nate's information is quite out of date. Things are changing quickly, but this is no longer true. And they were saying, "Yes, you're right.
You're right. It's no longer true."
Yes, but he's a data wonk, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, he's a data wonk, and all the data is bad.
Yeah, that's, and we'll get to that as well. But so really. We can't, part of the problem with losing time on this is we haven't been able to surf the wave, you know?
I know. That may never be us, though, but yeah.
Yeah, like we literally haven't been able to stay on top of things as they're changing.
Here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a propaganda narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't...
Outrun propaganda.
No, you can't really... turn the propaganda on a dime. Not really.
No.
You have to kind of set the stage for it, and then you have to introduce it, and then you have to have its big reveal.
Yeah, because right? not everyone spends hours every day obsessively doom scrolling through, you know, like article preprints.
You say that's like a bad thing.
But this whatever we accomplish here in this series of podcasts, I'm happy and kind of proud that it will serve as a kind of record of people trying to like surf the wave of disinformation and find, right. You know, as it's changing.
And this is the thing.
Like as it's changing, shifting,
and morphing. And I know Team Science wants to go on about how they want to stop spreading disinformation, but they're part of the disinformation themselves.
An awful lot of the team members are not ready to tell the truth, and they're not.
No,
they're not. You know,
they're not ready to like face the facts of what we're doing. Right. But they're not ready to face the implications of what's happening and what it means.
Yeah,
they still want to hammer vaccination as the big
gun that fixes everything.
And rather than embrace this model of Swiss cheese, right?
Yeah.
And really, right. with the Swiss cheese model, it's okay if you're missing a slice.
Right.
What's not okay is to have one slice.
Right, only one.
Right?
Yes.
That's the problem. But if you're missing one, you know, it's not the end of the world. Maybe even you're missing two. But if you stack them all together.
Only one is clearly inadequate.
It's completely inadequate. Just having one is completely inadequate. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that they don't want to admit or don't want to acknowledge and don't want to address. They just want everyone to please, please, for the love of God, get vaccinated. Whatever you do, just please get vaccinated. Rather than embracing a sort of a holistic view of what it means to change our world to adapt to this new reality.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we're going to set a timer in order to try and make this an actual speed run.
Sure. I think we only have three left to speed through. So, yeah.
We have, for this segment, we're going to do three articles, and I'm going to try to do them in 10 minutes each. If we blow that, we'll keep going a little bit, but that's our goal.
We'll do our best.
Okay. We're going.
All right. So number one, what we now know about how to fight the Delta variant of COVID. It's a column in the Tampa Bay Times from August 12th. August 10th. And
a friend of ours posted this and we looked through it and thought, this is actually pretty good.
It's actually pretty good. It's all right. I've seen so much worse. So this fellow is, it's in a unique position. He's a special assistant to the National Director of Pathology and Lab Medicine for the entire Veterans Affairs system, with a specific role in advising on elements of COVID testing for the system.
His name is J. Stacy Klutz.
Yep.
There we go.
Oh, he looks like Father Jim.
He looks like a priest, a retired pastor. Priest.
Yeah. So he's got a front row seat to the latest data because they use that information to make policy decisions. So here's a few important... So here's a person who's got access to a lot of data, right?
Yes.
And so suddenly, he's a little more informed than a lot of journalists who are presenting data for a narrative.
Yeah, and one of the reasons the journalists and even the MPHs and PhDs in epidemiology don't have great data, and we'll discuss that too, is because there isn't great data.
There isn't. It's not there. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, and a lot of that is a result of policy choices.
That was a policy decision.
Made long ago, but anyway, go.
Yes, so a few important points to help explain why you should get vaccinated and wear a mask, that you need to do both, right? So the new Delta variant sticks to you like Gorilla Glue. He makes a really great thing. If the original COVID strains were covered in syrup, this variant is covered in ultra-fast-drying Gorilla Super Glue, industrial strength. So like, you know, it's a little syrupy, it kind of sticks to you. Now this grabs on and holds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Viral loads are 1,000 times higher.
It sticks to your mucous membranes.
Membranes. And it develops a viral load that's 1,000 times higher. So it's so much easier for you to transmit because there's so much more virus anytime you exhale.
Yep.
Okay. So because of the higher viral load, it is much more infectious is the next point. Early versions of the virus had, I personally dispute some of the R values that people use, but I'm going to use his R value.
Right.
Early versions of the virus had a 2 to 2.5 R naught. So one infected person would infect 2 or so people on average.
Yep.
Delta has an R naught of 8. So in the infectious disease world, that's almost unheard of.
Yes, it's really high as viral illnesses go, and especially it's higher than most coronaviruses.
Yes.
Way higher than the flu, you know. So higher than the common cold.
So 5 days. A recent publication out of Singapore has data that confirms something folks have thought just by watching the progress of disease. Viral loads in the throats of vaccinated persons who become infected with Delta rise at the same rate as in unvaccinated people, but only for the first 3 days, for 5 days. After 5 days or so, the viral loads in a vaccinated person start to quickly drop, whereas those in the unvaccinated person persist. And that observation is important for a lot of reasons.
Yeah,
because
especially since an awful lot of those people who have that new viral load, they will not have any symptoms. They will not know that they are infected.
They don't know they're infected yet. Or necessarily even at all.
They may never know.
They may never know.
But they could set off a test. They would trigger a test.
With that viral load. But But the real important piece is, because of that, they're very infectious.
Yeah.
And, every bit as infectious as an unvaccinated person.
Necessarily done anything to mitigate the spread.
The mitigate spread, right. So young people, this the Delta variant is primarily being observed in patients younger than in round one. Children's hospitals are already filling up. Several of them are at capacity now, a few weeks after this. Because of the dynamics, it's much more capable of causing severe disease.
Yes.
You spew enough of any human pathogen on someone without immunity, it's not going to go well, right? So this doesn't look good for the beginning of the school year, which has already started. And he says it's actually terrifying. I think this is terrifying.
Yes.
I actually can't believe we're doing this.
No, it's, I mean, obviously we have to believe it, but
I mean, it's happening.
It's
you gotta
still
believe it, but
gobsmacking. You
like,
know.
I just the people who are responsible for this, and I'm going to leave the politicians out of it because politicians don't care. They just want to get reelected. They honestly don't give a shit. They just want to get reelected.
They are, actually awful, tedious people.
Yeah,
some of the most boring,
I'm not really
even
talking about
people you'll ever
I'm
meet.
Talking about these earnest, well-educated, usually women that work in public health departments, the county health department, that have master's and doctoral degrees in public health, who are like, here are your tips for restarting school, and not, for the love of God Almighty, let's not do this.
There are many, many, many of those people who
are How
are
these people
still,
sleeping at night? I don't even understand. Like, how are they sleeping at night?
They are deliberately not surfing the wave of information, right?
Right, like
they allow themselves to deliberately fall behind because it's safer there. It feels safer.
And then they can say, oh, if only we don't later, my God, children are going to be
dead. They won't say that. People
Jesus.
Just go smoothly from there's no way we could have known to it's inevitable now. They're
not
doing
inevitable.
It with climate change. They're doing it with Afghanistan. You know, they're like, yeah, just...
I guess these white women talk a good game about loving children.
Sure.
And here we are dragging them through a meat grinder. It's just, I appalled
one of my Twitter friends by saying, no, we're just going to be throwing kids into graves.
That appears to be the plan.
And he's like, don't you think that's a little hyperbolic? I'm like, absolutely not.
Now, mind you, probably not millions.
No, not millions.
Possibly thousands.
Many thousands.
So,
yeah,
we'll
talk about our predictions maybe.
I don't like to make too many predictions, especially I don't like to predict anyone's death, for God's
yeah,
sake. God,
right.
Forgive me. But this is just,
I mean,
like if you
God
do the
forbid,
math.
We should be, you know, creating that reality.
Right, no. So,
with
but,
our words.
But like if you just do the math, this is actually terrifying.
It's terrifying.
And I can't believe it's happening.
Yes.
So the vaccines work, and everyone needs to say this for some reason to maintain their credibility.
Right.
But let me just be very blunt. The vaccines will probably keep you alive.
Yes. No, they have smoothly changed the definition of what it means for the vaccines to work. And, you know, given from what people were saying early on that they would end the pandemic.
This is
right?
From what people were saying early on, this is just textbook gaslighting.
Yes.
Oh, no, they work. They work just fine.
Yes.
They reduce hospitalization and death. That's all we ever said.
There are still lots of good reasons to get vaccinated.
You know,
and it really is protective.
For you.
For the individuals who get the vaccines.
Yes, it's protective against hospitalization and death.
Absolutely. And that has not changed. But many of the other claims that were made, many of the other reasons for everyone to be vaccinated have turned out to be
just false.
Completely off. Completely off.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Well, and really, I don't actually mean to call everyone a liar in saying this, but they could never have been true.
Right.
Like, and someone sort of glossed this in one of the many articles.
There wasn't data to justify
There was
the
no
claim.
Data to justify that claim.
Yep.
There was nothing, there was no reason to assume it
right.
based on any of the science done. And if you'd read the science,
right.
there's no reason to believe that this vaccine that's designed to suppress the immune response in your vascular system is going to stop transmission.
Right.
There was no reason to think that or conclude that.
Right, right.
What we actually found that people wanted to crow about is that if you vaccinate enough people, you slow the spread of the original,
right.
like alpha variant, pardon me,
right.
that's not the original, but the alpha variant, to a crawl.
Yes.
That's what studies actually showed, where the CDC is like, take your masks off, vaccinated people. Woohoo!
Yeah. No.
As if other variants did not exist or would never come.
And we just read public health officials and politicians, some who are both, basically still talking about how we don't want to undermine confidence in vaccine by revealing the truth
about the
people.
Vaccines, right? That they actually don't, in the pandemic, they just protect you, which, you know, is a thing. That's a valuable thing.
And and all of this adds up to, oh, look at that. People don't trust the public health authorities and officials.
I wonder how. That's weird. Isn't that weird? So, yes. So, what the shot does not do, he does say it, what the shot does not do is produce an immunoglobulin antibody response to the virus at the surface of the throat mucosa. Yeah. That's the antibody type that could prevent the virus from ever binding in the first place. Or, I talked about like a terminating vaccine, but no one likes to use that term.
Yes.
It doesn't provide sterilizing immunity. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Where it sterilizes the virus and you can't pass it on. But it does prevent disease and death, and it's effective at doing that. And it's great if you're vaccinated, but you still need to wear a mask so you don't pass it on to people. You still need all those other layers of protection, all those NPIs still need to take place to prevent transmissions. Because here's the other thing folks don't like to talk about, even with that data out of Israel, because it's been Israel data both times, where the CDC was like, vaccinate people, just take your masks off. You don't need them. You don't transmit the virus.
Right.
Right? That was a bit of a lie in that the data showed it slowed transmission to a crawl. If it doesn't stop transmission in its entirety, every transmission that does take place is an opportunity for new variants.
Right.
And the folks making these statements
because,
know that.
Because in the vaccinated individual, you've like neutralized the majority of the virus, except for those that express a mutation that gives them a competitive advantage.
Competitive advantage.
And allows them to escape the vaccine. So by definition, the ones that are likely to be transmitted are the mutants, are the mutated ones.
The mutated ones.
Yep.
Which is actually more likely in vaccinated people than in unvaccinated people.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's next? Keep engaging in NPIs on top of your vaccination if you're vaccinated.
Non-pharmaceutical interventions. That is masking, distancing,
staying home unless you don't have
activities.
Outdoor activity only. Not connecting with people outside of your household or your pod, right?
Yeah, for the love of God.
So yeah, let me just...
Don't fly.
Sweet, precious Jesus.
I still can't believe people are actually doing that.
So the thing is, and this is... I'll just touch on this here. I have it's part of my rant that I'm kind of saving for the end. Effectively, what we have is wealthy people who have access to healthcare infecting the rest of the planet at will.
Yep.
And then hoarding.
And once they do that, the in countries that don't even have healthcare or vaccines, it just burns
through
the
population.
It just burns through
the population.
Through millions.
And of course, with each infection,
right,
a variant opportunity.
Right.
By the millions, in some countries, by the billions, right? And then those same wealthy people hoard the vaccines and the care. It's obscene. But what you can do, regardless, to some extent, the different things that you need to engage in, masking, keeping distance from people outside of your pod, or if you have had exposure, keep distance from people in your pod so it doesn't spread through your pod, whatever that is, whether it's a household or group of friends. Keep your interactions outside or in ventilated spaces, and time. Don't spend any longer indoors or in contact with people outside your household than is absolutely necessary. Vaccination if it's appropriate in your context, and
if you really have a trustworthy pod of people, then maybe that makes sense. But they all still have to follow the original like pod rules.
Pod rules, right? And I keep saying household because that's our context, but that's not necessarily everyone else's. They may live alone, but have a few special trusted contacts.
Right.
And then lastly,
remember you're trusting your lives to those people.
Yeah, you're literally trusting your lives to these people.
Even if you're vaccinated.
Even if you're vaccinated. That's still true. Then this is the last thing is having a closed social network with whom you do your primary face-to-face interactions, if any. Okay. So those are like six different things to keep in mind. And together, those things really brings transmission
to a stop.
To a stop.
Yeah.
Like society-wide, they bring it to a stop.
Yeah.
For you, it's very protective for you, and it keeps you from transmitting to people out, you know, like if you are exposed, it keeps you from passing it on.
To people who may not be vaccinated, may not be able to be vaccinated,
maybe immunocompromised.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So there's one. What's that, 15 minutes?
It was about, we went over 14, maybe 13, I don't know.
So will things ever return to normal?
This is from Salon by Lucian K. Truscott IV. This is July 31st.
It's published July 31st. And, you know, I think it's aged pretty well, honestly, because it doesn't look that way right now. It looks more and more like things aren't going to go back to normal. And let me just answer that question right away in this way. I think there will be some new norms and things will rebalance. And I've said for a long time now, I think that that rebalancing point is the fall of 2024.
Yeah, that's a long way away, folks.
That's a long way away. And I still think that's true. I don't think we need to push it out, because I think we'll reopen schools, children will die, and then some people, some places will get shaken up. And then we'll try again next year.
Yep.
And then we'll pull our heads out of our asses in 2023 winter, and then actually come up with a plan, and then actually have something to do in 2024, because it'll be an election year.
Yes,
and they'll have to deliver something.
Yes,
so but I expect a rebound.
Whoever, you know, I'm not. Biden may have been lying or may change his mind about running for a second term, but I don't think he will. I think he actually knows that
it's beyond him,
right? That he can't do this indefinitely,
right?
And or even for four more years at that point, and that he needs to get out. He needs to have an exit strategy,
right?
Just like we did in Afghanistan.
Bam.
But
so look at corpses on the runways, what you're saying.
Yeah, right. He there will be some new politicians. God forbid Trump might be one of them.
Oh, I'm confident he will be. He's not gone.
He'll be trying to run again. But let's hope that there's some sane...
There's not going to be any sane anything.
We don't put our hope in politicians.
But I do know that folks will actually try to do something that makes sense, some kind of a coherent plan that makes sense, because it's an election year, and they will deliver something because it's an election year.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it.
People want basic safety.
Some police departments got defunded last year because you had to deliver something for an election year.
They weren't delivering basic safety.
And don't kid yourself.
Right.
That's the only reason that happened. That's the only reason the protests got the favorable press that they did get and the sort of like swell of support that they did get. That's really the only reason. It was an election year. And, you know, people were really fed up with being in quarantine. So that represented something other than a shift about racial reconciliation in the United States.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So just things are better and different, you know.
The police decided to riot all summer
and here we are.
here we are.
Right. So I do think there will be some kind of rebalancing that will become normal for us. But I don't think we're ever going back to January 2020 or December. I mean, we're not going back to October 2019. That place doesn't exist anymore.
No, no.
That world does not exist anymore.
We're never going to be in a September 10th world either.
Right.
You know,
we're never going back to that universe.
Yep.
That was then.
Especially not after how badly we've...
toasted the one we're in.
Responded to that crisis event. This is the crisis, the biggest crisis in America since then.
Since 9/11, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyway.
Right. So if you're like me, we're looking at this one here, a little more, the Salon article, looking at it a little more detail. You jump in a little bit. Dr. Jeffrey is his name, Shaman? A Columbia University epidemiologist told the Post, if you're like me, pardon me. I should back up a little.
I don't know where you are.
I'm on the second page of the first page. The message of the Centers for Disease Control's documents obtained by the Washington Post and the New York Times on Friday isn't specified in those documents themselves, but in one epidemiologist's reaction to them. Herd immunity is not relevant, as we are seeing plenty of evidence of repeat and breakthrough infections. That's Dr. Jeffrey Shaman, a Columbia University epidemiologist, talking to the Post. Now, if you're like...
Shaman.
Is it Shaman?
I don't know.
I don't know how to pronounce
it. It's probably
it.
Not Shaman, but...
I hope it's not Shaman, but yeah. Maybe it's Shaman. Yeah, it's all good. So you might need to let that sink in, because until Friday morning, July 30th, 2021, herd immunity was the goal we were all looking towards. You remember that narrative?
Right.
That's now... Oh, right. You know... That was never going to happen.
Right.
Remember when President Biden set his goal of vaccinating 70% of the population? The population?
Right.
By July 4th?
The population of over 12, of 12 and up.
No one ever qualified it.
Right.
They only ever stated that we needed to vaccinate 70% of the population. Right. Not partially.
Children aren't
not over 12.
Children aren't people, folks.
Come on, man. No, 70% of the population. And right now, we're at about 55.
Yep.
And it's August, 22nd. What followed was an extended discussion among experts and politicians about whether that goal would amount to the country reaching herd immunity.
And as we noted, Fauci admitted to basically giving... Lowballing that number as a noble lie to keep people from knowing the truth and
getting discouraged by the facts on the ground, right?
Yeah.
The hope was that COVID would turn out to be similar to chickenpox or measles or polio, diseases for which herd immunity was long ago reached with vaccines. When enough people had been vaccinated, those diseases simply went away, with only occasional outbreaks of measles in communities which lost their herd immunity, largely due to anti-vaccine movements.
Yep.
Now, most experts believed it would take vaccinating somewhere between 70 and 80% of Americans. 90% of Americans. For the country to reach something resembling herd immunity. I've got to say, I think before this moment, because this is kind of a, this is going to read for people as a vaccine failure because they weren't honest about how this could work.
Right.
So I think before this moment, I think 70% was really doable.
Yeah, was achievable.
I think 70% was achievable. Yeah. I mean, we already knew 70% of the population was willing to take it, right?
Right.
I think 90%, that initial 20%.
Never achieved.
Well, I think that would have taken a lot of work.
Yeah.
I think that last 10% is comprised of people who can't take it and won't take it.
Yes, yeah.
But that 20% between 70 and 90 would be hard won but reachable.
Hmm.
And I think...
I think 80 is achievable with the work, but 90 may never be.
Well, here's the thing with achievable with work.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of work that it would take is really... would have started last spring and not lying to people.
Right.
That's part of the work.
That would have been a big...
A huge... because really, you have to
A
build,
big improvement in building public trust.
Public trust.
Yep.
And then...
Which is the number one job of epidemiologists.
Just to beat that horse. But then also, I know people like to... Speaking of beating on dead horses, people love to beat up unvaccinated folks. One of the things they don't really like to also recognize is they live in counties, albeit with people they've elected. But keep in mind, we elected Barack Obama. We elected Joe Biden.
Yes.
We elected Trump.
I forgot to start the timer. Sorry, I'm starting it now.
Start it now. But those people live in counties where the politicians have a vested interest in denuding the health system there.
Yes.
And their actual access to... I mean, sure, yes, I know that there are places where vaccines are going spent. But if you do public health on the ground, you know that there are certain populations that you have to dig deep to reach.
Yeah, and it's not just because people are vaccine hesitant. A lot of it is because people live in poverty and there is no local health infrastructure.
Right, there's no... I mean,
a lot of these communities, they don't even have sewage.
I'm just saying,
they don't even have septic systems.
So people like to point at the map and say, look, they're the people that voted for 45, and now they're all unvaccinated, let them all die, or whatever their issue is, right? But the fact is, they live in places with such underfunded health systems that the reality of getting vaccinated is far more complicated than just making the decision, jumping in the car, and getting it.
Right.
Right?
I mean, they're... Yeah,
there are just layers of issues going on that, you know, I'm not going to take the time to unpack.
No, but I mean, some obvious ones, you know, like just in terms of everything having been either destroyed or privatized in their communities, right. And basically no public infrastructure
whatsoever
for community health.
And so the individuals that need to get vaccinated need to invest significant work of their own to get vaccinated.
I mean, think about what it's like to try and convince someone to go, like, drive 100 miles to or 50 miles to get vaccinated if they don't have a car and if they've never seen a dentist.
Right.
Right? Or, like, or much less seeing a physician regularly.
Right. Like, so you're asking them, at this moment in time, that's a huge ask that you don't have the credibility to make.
Right.
Full stop. So,
because you haven't convinced these people right. that you're on their side.
So I mark that as a questionable assertion to make. Okay.
Right.
So anywho, so we need this huge number to reach herd immunity. And that's what I mean. Like, we can get to 90, but we need to address that, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get to 90. So, now, the fact is that COVID is a global pandemic. Many countries...
By the way, those numbers, I mean, again, just emphasize it again. Those numbers were always based on life before Delta.
They were based on life before Delta, and they were based on the notion that herd immunity would make this go away.
Right, right.
Which is not possible with the vaccine we had.
It's not possible. It was never possible with either the vaccine, and it's certainly not possible with Delta.
Right, with the vaccine, either of the vaccines, not possible with Delta, and at no point was that possible with the vaccine in isolation, with no other measures.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
we
that
know
was
that now.
Not then, and not now.
No,
that was never.
We understand this now.
You know, so now people are willing to admit that out loud and talk about that now.
Because they have to. Because not doing it is not admitting it is serious malpractice.
It's malpractice at this point.
Leading to, you know,
I could see a court case if they didn't just open, you know,
yeah,
start to pivot in this way.
Leading to a lot of unnecessary cases and deaths and severe illness.
Right. So, COVID being a global pandemic, many countries in the developing world lacking widespread vaccine distribution kind of argues against the kind of herd immunity.
Right.
But the goal seemed within reach if enough of us could be convinced and get vaccinated.
Yep.
That kind of went out the door because there was unpublished data from outbreak investigations and outside studies showing that vaccinated individuals infected with Delta
may be able to transmit the virus as easily as those who are unvaccinated. Yep.
And fundamentally, herd immunity has to do with transmissibility.
Yes.
A disease goes away when enough people become immune to the infectious agent, so they can't transmit it anymore.
Right.
So that whole framework of herd immunity, which our entire public conversation was around, was always kind of illusory. So everyone wants to talk about how the vaccines, I'm going to quote her here because it's just so, the vaccines, they're beautiful, they work, they're amazing. But they're not going to give you that local immunity.
Yeah, and some of this is because of what we talked about previously, which is the vaccine does most of its work in your bloodstream and not your nose, your sinuses, and throat, and all that.
Right.
Not in your mucosa. It does eventually your like antibodies and whatnot migrate into your mucosa and
right.
respond to an infection. Your system ramps up, produces more mucus, you know,
right?
That's full of antibodies, and you do get it under control, but initially your body doesn't really know to react there.
Right. And that's why it saves your life, right? It stops it
yes.
from stops you from developing
the vascular
disease
circulating in your bloodstream, infecting your organs, all that,
right? And the reality is it will likely stop you from dying, probably stop you from going to the hospital even.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be worth it to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I think a lot of Americans, especially the team science, is not aware that is not actually the whole case to make to some vaccine hesitant folks.
Right.
Right?
Right.
A trip to the hospital might be the last vacation they'll ever get.
Yeah.
And so just understand that just saying, hey, listen, this could save your life. Just take this vaccine. You know, just go get it. Come on, man. that's actually not enough of a case for some folks.
Yeah.
And that's maybe hard to grasp or put your head around.
Especially now that we have to say, no, you'll still need to wear a mask and social distance and not go into theaters
you gotta
and
do
restaurants
all that stuff.
And
yeah.
big public events.
All that still has to happen. But please, just get this vaccine. It could save your life. Because people have a calculus about their lives that a lot of middle-class team science folks can't even comprehend.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the other thing the CDC findings published tell us that the unvaccinated population is no longer, quote, the problem. It's part of a problem.
Right.
But let me just address this now. I keep thinking.
They're not the single problem.
They're not the single problem. But let me just address this here and now. I've said part of this before, but I really want to take this fully on about the unvaccinated people being the problem. When we talk about this in this context, at this moment, with this disease, first of all, in the United States, half that group is children who can't be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that before.
Yep.
But globally, wealthy people have been hoarding the vaccine
yep.
to the peril of poor people, and now we're accusing them of harming us by harboring new variants.
Right. The poor people.
Those poor people yeah. running around unvaccinated, creating new variants, and making us all yeah. sick.
And this feeds straight into the anti-immigrant.
Straight you know, into it.
Dirty immigrant
hysteria.
It is hysteria
sick and perverse.
Yep.
So when you stand up and start crowing about how these awful unvaccinated people are harming us all if they would just go get vaccinated,
right?
You probably just need to sit down.
Yeah.
You just need to sit down. I understand. You have decided that the people that aren't in your tribe, the Trump tribe, the anti-vaxxer tribe, the tribe you don't like, are all those unvaccinated people and you hate them because
right.
they're not in your tribe.
Well, right.
what you're actually talking about is people who don't have any control over this.
If your goal is to keep people safe and the most people safe as possible,
right.
you do not think of people that way.
You can't think of them that way.
No, you literally can't because you need to consider interactions with each person that might help them make decisions that will keep everyone safe.
Keep everyone safe, right?
So
many times where there were opportunities when I still went into stores, right?
Right.
People were doing some seriously unsafe stuff. You know, I didn't confront them. I just kept myself safe
right.
and gave them
a wide berth
and my best auntie look, you know? Like, you know, your mom is not here, but I am.
Yeah.
And some of them would
especially like for young people,
especially young people,
work,
it, right. it's very effective and they'll put their mask back on or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah.
But so the truth is the unvaccinated were actually never the problem.
We don't really even understand who the unvaccinated are.
Yeah. We don't have a full grasp of who those individuals
are. Most of them are not actually the people that fit your Trump world stereotype.
The stereotype of who these folks are and what they're like.
As you pointed out last time, an awful lot of the most vocal anti-vaxxers actually are vaccinated.
Well, anti-maskers. The most vocal anti-maskers.
Anti-maskers.
And
right.
pro-Trump people got yeah. their vaccines as they could so they yeah. could take their mask off.
Yeah.
So when the CDC said, oh, take your mask off, they already had.
They were waiting for that. Well, they weren't waiting for that. They got there probably even before they, you know, waited out their shots, right?
Right.
Right.
So. They got their first shot to stop wearing the mask.
Yep.
Right? And then the CDC said it, and they said, hey, yeah. losers, I told you.
Right.
Right? So it's really not lining up the way people think
it's hard
up.
To understate the magnitude of that mistake.
It's hard to really, because, you know.
And how basically this was an attempt to burnish the achievements of the Biden administration.
This was the Biden administration's mission accomplished banner.
Yep. Look at that.
Oh, one last thing then. If there is an enemy in the war against COVID, it's not the unvaxxed, it's the virus itself.
Absolutely.
Right? So don't demonize human beings.
No.
For your political reasons.
No.
If
you're going to, I mean, a lot of people actually are reachable and are convincible.
Really?
But you have to treat them as people and really get, you know, take the chance to hear them out and understand their concerns.
Right. And I think I've said this to you before. I don't know if I've said it here on the podcast, but I want to acknowledge that, yes, the people who are like anti-mask, anti-vax, pro 45 or whatever, those individuals exist. And I know maybe you don't like them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's real, but it's not the whole story.
Yeah.
And secondly, there is actually a hardcore group of folks who are in fact anti-vax. They are the people who will refuse the rabies vaccine if they've been bitten by a rabid animal.
Yeah.
There's a small group.
Small
of
group.
It's a small. That group, the group you will not convince.
No, the people who are making money being anti-vaxxers, running YouTube channels and whatnot, they're all vaxxed.
Right. Yeah. Jesus. And they have great health care.
Yes.
Right? So just please understand, there are people who are grifters, but there's a small hardcore of individuals who really are truly and absolutely anti-vax, and you will never convince them, but they are small.
Yeah, it's
well under 10%. I think it's under 5%, if I'm really honest.
Right.
And I'm talking, and really, this is the razor line on that group.
Right.
They won't take a rabies vaccine if they've been bitten by a rabid animal.
Right.
Most people, they talk a good game, but you get them in the room with a rabies bite, they will take that vaccine.
if their own doctor, ER doctor tells them, if your chance of death is 100%.
100%. Take this vaccine, it goes up dramatically. And they'll take it.
Yeah.
Or there are some
risk.
Your risk goes up
down dramatically.
Goes down, pardon me. Your risk goes down dramatically. I said that backwards. But
it's now 200% likely that you'll die.
But no, that small group exists. They aren't a figment of your imagination.
No.
But they're not nearly as big as you might think they are.
Yeah, and the other thing we have to acknowledge is that even if all the people that are actually anti-vaxxers got the vaccine,
We're still here.
We're still all at risk.
Absolutely, that hasn't changed.
Until this virus is like down to negligible levels of transmission. And looks today like polio looked like,
In 1975.
Yeah.
Right?
Or doesn't look like polio.
Oh, right.
We basically have gotten it eliminated. Okay, which leads us to?
Yes. We have to accept some risk of COVID-19. The coronavirus may never truly go away.
This is from Vox.
This is from Vox, and the author is German Lopez? August 13th, 2020.
German Lopez.
Yes.
So, opposed to the French or Italian Lopez.
There's a growing consensus among health experts, COVID-19 may never go away. We'll likely always have some coronavirus out there infecting people and hopefully only in rare cases getting them seriously ill. The realistic goal is to defang the virus, make it less deadly, not eliminate it entirely.
Mm.
This is not a surrender to the virus. For a long time, we've lived with the seasonal flu, a family of viruses that kills up to tens of thousands of Americans each year. While we can and should take steps to mitigate the risk of the flu, including getting vaccinated for every year, we've never been willing to shut down society or close in-person schooling to fully eradicate it. Americans have accepted some level of risk to continue living normally. I just want to point out right here, right now.
This is just not true.
Well, first of all, it's just not true. But secondly, it is this framing itself that in April of 2020, we called noxious and depraved. It is this framing of just let it burn through that got Sweden roundly
criticized
worldwide.
And it was the UK's strategy to keep basically nursing home residents safe and let it burn through the rest of society until they reached herd immunity.
Yep. Which everyone was like, what the fuck?
Well,
right?
Because some people apparently just thought that it would not actually overwhelm hospitals or kill that many people.
Right.
You know?
And I think it's the thing of large numbers, right?
Yeah.
Where you say,
law of large numbers.
The law of large numbers. Where you say, that's only 1%? Like, what, 1 out of 100?
Do you know how many people that is in the UK?
That's a lot of people. And so, I keep hearing folks say, let's just accept some of these breakthrough case numbers, right?
Yeah.
Let's just accept it on its face, some of these ridiculous-ass numbers under 1%, right?
Oh, yeah, 0.0. It's usually 0.01, like 99.99.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really small. With 300 million people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Right.
So, that's millions of people. Millions of people. And whether or not you care about the hospitals or not. I mean, I know that's a case that a lot of people can make because they're depraved in some way, and the fact that millions of people are sick and dying isn't enough motivation for them. But they need to know that the hospitals will not be impacted.
They won't be able to get any medical care if they need it.
If they need it. They need the self-interest angle.
Even in an emergency.
Even in an emergency. So there's that self-interest angle where you say, listen, millions of people are going to die. And you're like, and? Right. And maybe you won't be able to use the hospital if you get sick. Oh, wait, let me do something.
I get it. Yeah.
And I want to also remember and remind everyone that in 2020, when Americans realized that it was black and brown people dying,
right,
we said, oh, fuck this. Let's go to the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit. You know, let the hospitals fill up with black and brown people.
You know,
I
also, you know, translate essential workers into and brown people. Right.
Right.
Well, it wasn't just that, because, I mean, I got a letter from my employer declaring me an essential worker and saying that I wasn't, in other words, I was supposed to show anyone who tried to stop me from going to work this letter to say, see, I'm essential to this company, well, therefore you can't stop me.
I think there's two things there. There's the two things that are actually separate from each other. Essential workers was code for disposable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you're an essential worker, you're disposable. It doesn't matter if you get sick and die. We can replace you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Right. That's what essential worker means. But then...
It had two meanings.
It had two meanings, yeah. Right? And then on the other side of that, separate from that, there was this thing where Americans were very... taking this somewhat seriously and cautiously. Right. There was this wind of about 6 weeks where folks were like, whoa.
Right.
And then...
But we still can't... But despite this fact that we're taking this very seriously and cautiously and the federal government stepping in and doing all these things and whatnot, we can't, like, let our schedule slip. We can't affect our product release plans.
Product release dates. That's just ridiculous.
And that's why I was in this weird, when worlds collide situation where for 3 weeks I was an essential worker who was working from home.
Right.
And then I was furloughed for 3 months.
Right. What the hell? But you saw that turn around very quickly, and people get very mad and start marching on the Capitol to open things back up as soon as we started getting data about who was dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the furlough approach was because companies realized they were going to get a big bailout.
Yes. As soon as they realized they were going to get money, just send everybody home.
Yeah.
Sorry about your paycheck. You can hold on to the insurance we already paid for.
Yeah, we'll cover your health insurance. Well, and a lot of companies didn't do that.
Didn't even do that.
You know, my employer did. That was more than they had to do.
Right.
You know.
So this brief thing in Vox is talking about how this is likely going to be true with COVID-19. It'll be like the flu, which is the thing people were arguing against.
Right.
It's not the flu. My God, this is not the flu.
Right.
Please stop calling it the flu.
But they're basically saying the same thing that everyone was roundly mocking Trumpers for a year ago.
Right. Team science.
Over a year ago.
Now, team science is saying it'll be like the flu. Okay,
it'll
it's not going
like
to be a big deal,
flu.
Right? Yeah. It'll be great.
There is a grain of truth to this in that no, it's true. I mean, we never got on top of the common cold because the common cold predates any kind of modern medicine and is endemic and also has the same characteristics in that it mutates quickly.
Mutates.
Whatever vaccine technology we have, mRNA or old school vaccines or killed virus or weakened virus or whatever, people have put a lot of effort into trying to come up with vaccines that would really immunize people against getting colds.
Yeah, that's not
because
a thing.
No one likes that.
No one
it's
likes
never
the cold.
Worked. It never right. happens because of the endemic and mutating nature of common colds. And
right.
because there are just way too many strains, existing strains, to deal with.
So you know.
And to be clear, COVID-19 is
a coronavirus. Similar to the common cold.
Yeah.
I hesitate to say similar, but
no,
it's in the same
class
of viruses.
It's much more like SARS. I mean, it is a SARS.
It's a SARS virus. Right?
It's a variant of SARS.
But what you get in the common cold is the common cold is generally a coronavirus.
Yes.
And SARS is a coronavirus,
right?
And COVID-19 is a SARS virus,
right? But the whole SARS branch of coronaviruses is much more severe than
the common cold,
and more severe than influenza, also a coronavirus,
which is also a coronavirus, right? So,
which again has subtypes and all that.
Mm-hmm. If you go back, coming back again to the article, if you go back to the earlier days of the pandemic, the original hope with vaccines was more modest. Previously, the Food and Drug Administration set the standard for an acceptable COVID-19 vaccine at 50% efficacy. The expectation was the vaccine wouldn't stop all cases of COVID-19, but would at least reduce the severity of the disease. That's all we ever wanted.
That's not what they
there
were...
There was never a herd immunity plan. There was never a pandemic eradication plan. All we ever wanted was to reduce severity of disease.
We thought, again, bullshit. It's just bullshit. We thought we could achieve, we in the UK and some other countries, not as official policy in the US, but thought that we could achieve herd immunity through, you know, sort of controlled community spread or whatnot.
And the point of controlled community spread is to keep the hospitals open.
Right.
Because that's all we care about. We don't give a shit if you die.
Right. But so that the number of...
I mean, you're not dying as a bonus.
But so that, yeah, you didn't have people dying for lack of access to any health care from other reasons.
But here's the thing. If we actually gum up the hospital system, the healthcare system, and bring it to its knees, that affects rich and poor alike.
Yeah, I mean...
And, so we got to stop that.
And they didn't, a lot of these toffs, you know, didn't even protect themselves. And this was kind of a wake-up call to people, I think. I mean, because you had like Boris Johnson actually hospitalized for COVID-19, right?
45 was, you know? So
yeah, people don't realize how sick he was.
Right.
He only was saved by monoclonal antibodies.
Really? You know? So I keep hearing shouts and murmurs that doesn't work, but, you know.
Oh, no, it's a pretty effective treatment.
That's what I've heard and read. That's the data
I've
read.
No, anyway. He was losing oxygenation, like blood oxygenation rapidly. He was in trouble. He couldn't, I mean, he really just was going to tough it out because he's a big tough guy, you know, but like he could barely stand. He was panting. He could barely get enough oxygen in.
So like regular, but with like low oxygen?
Exactly.
Anyway.
But no, I mean, people studied just the way the video of him just standing and breathing. And he was doing this chest pulling thing that people do when they're very sick.
When they're in bad shape. So as Baylor College's Peter Hote has put it at the time, even if it's not the best vaccine, it could still prevent me from going to the hospital or worse. Yet somewhere along the way, perhaps with the news the vaccines were far more effective than expected, that message has been lost. And now anything short of perfection is perceived as a failure. But actually... That's not really true. It's a bit of a retcon.
It is a retcon.
That's not the narrative we've had.
Nope. That's a retroactive continuity change to try and cover up for the fact that the writers needed to, you know, write out a character or something.
So we need to write out that whole storyline about herd immunity. Yeah, that didn't happen. We actually only ever wanted to just reduce the severity of disease.
That was the plan, and that's... They were saying, this vaccine, don't get your hopes up. That's what they were saying. It's going to help people. It's going to be worth taking, but it's not going to solve the pandemic.
Right. Yeah. That wasn't what we said.
That's not what they said. That's not what they promised.
No. So consider the study published by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on the Provincetown outbreak. You know, I was talking about that so long ago, but I guess everyone's reading about it now.
It seems like forever ago, doesn't it?
It really does.
It was the halcyon days when it was just a bunch of gay men gathering to socialize in an annual, you know, what do they call it?
Bear week.
And no one died. A few people got sick, but it was such an uplifting story.
Uplifting story. I know, right? But the initial headlines about the study focused on the fact that 3/4 of cases tracked in the study were among vaccinated people. The virus spread in a very vaccinated community. The implication was that vaccinated people should wear masks indoors in public, was that the Delta variant can spread at a high level even among the people who got their shots. But if you dig into the details, it's true. Vaccinated people, it reveals good news. More than 1,000 cases so far linked to Provincetown, only 7 reported hospitalizations, some unvaccinated, and no deaths.
No deaths, yeah.
So if this was 2020, given overall hospitalization and death rates, the outbreak would have likely produced 100 hospitalizations and 10 deaths.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good that no one died. It's good that no one died. I'm not saying people should die.
We don't know what the infected people's long-term health trajectories will be.
We do not. So in short, the author says, pay attention to hospitalizations and deaths and not just cases. And there are some concerns about long COVID, lingering effects in those infected.
It does mention
like
it.
Some overwhelming concerns, fatigue. Right. Still, experts say serious long-term symptoms after a COVID-19 infection seem to be fairly rare. Again, that fairly rare.
Fairly.
0.5% is rare. 0.5% of the U.S. population is something like 100, 150 million?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of people. I get orders of magnitude wrong, so don't correct, you know.
Right.
I know I'm wrong, but I'm, but it's millions of people, not 5 or 6.
No.
We're talking about millions of people.
No, trying to surf the wave of information. The stuff I'm hearing about long COVID cases now is
not pretty.
Is horrific.
Right.
It's awful.
So even if this is absolutely factual, experts say serious long-term symptoms after a COVID-19 infection seem to be fairly rare. That's still millions of people.
Correct.
And at any rate, these kinds of long-term symptoms aren't unique to the coronavirus. They happen with the flu. Because this is just like the flu. Come on, guys. While we still have
Who
to get...
Who gets long flu?
It does take up to 6 weeks to fully recover from the flu.
Well, yeah, that's not 6 years,
right? Not 18 months, right?
Maybe that's a thing. Maybe people have lingering effects from flu virus.
A lot of people do.
I think it can cause arthritis symptoms and stuff like that. But it's not like... There's not a word. I'm not aware of a word for that. So.
But no, it's also just patently offensive to come here claiming to be on Team Science and compare this to the flu.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again,
while we still have to get more people vaccinated, at a certain point, we'll have to acknowledge we've done what we can. It might not be ideal, but we could learn to live with a vaccine-weakened version of COVID-19. Hopefully.
Because, I mean, we've done what we can without trying to slow the wheels of capitalism.
Right. It might not be ideal, but we can learn to live with a vaccine-weakened version of COVID-19. Hopefully, not unlike how we've long dealt with the flu.
Yeah, this is bad.
Yeah, that's not quite.
This is not a good take.
Yeah, no, it's not a good take.
Okay, so I think we're gonna call this the end of this segment.
I think you're right.
It feels like we're in an endless version of the Two Towers.
But we're not for real.
Like we're on our way to Mordor and we're never going to get there. And like, oh my God, there's still a whole nother movie left to go.
Yeah, kind of.
Right.
But not really. We're getting there.
We are getting there.
Right.
And so we're going to call this a segment and hopefully it'll be a little shorter and more digestible than the previous one.
Yep.
And say goodbye to everyone until the next segment.
Goodbye.
Bye. If I'm changing, 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 please let go.